This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Just keep it safe with me. Anything you say will always stay.
All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Andy Petrillo, Dave Festruck of the Toronto Star. What a Tuesday afternoon. It's great to see you two, and I hope you're ready to evolve away from the Matt Haas Show gameplay, because it's go time this afternoon on Overdrive. I'm looking forward to it. How are we feeling?
Me too, although I feel like I missed out on the blazer memo. You got to give me a heads up on this when both you guys are going to go collared shirt and blazer. Now I just look like I'm wearing my PJs.
No, it's all good. I saw you. What was that photo shoot you were posting about and the awards you were winning and holding up? It's like I do photo shoots. I don't have awards. I just do photo shoots. I didn't realize that awards were necessary for a photo shoot. What's up with that?
No. So that was last week, and that was honestly, it's a big thank you to the Canadian Academy, the Canadian Screen Awards. Mm-hmm. As you know, the last few years, because of the pandemic, they've been held virtually. So a lot of the award winners never, because normally when you go live, when you win an award, you walk outside the red carpet, and there's a photographer there, they take pictures and what have you. Last couple of years, that hasn't been the case. So they just extended this courtesy. They said, listen, we have George Pimentel, who's a renowned photographer. They're like, he's offering up his time if you guys want to take photos with your trophy. And I'm like, yeah. And
absolutely.
I'm going to bring the one from 2015 as well. And I'm going to do a double shoot. I'm about like 90 trophies away from catching up to James Duffy.
Right.
Anyways, it was fun. It was really nice. It was
good
fun.
It
was nice
that's
of them
great.
To do that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, a photo shoot, awards, you got to take advantage. Absolutely.
But like, and
there were some poses, though. And I was going to say, like, just when you think you're a model, because, you know, you see models and they do these, like, weird things in magazines, but yet they find a way to still look good. Like, at one point, you tried to have me, like, sit down, lean forward, move your shoulder this way, slouch that way. I'm like, dude, I just look like I'm sitting on a toilet right now.
It really is tough.
Like, this is not attractive.
It's very tough. When you have, like, I have no profiles. I don't have a blue steel. I don't have, I can't turn left, right. I'm immobile when I'm in there. I can't do anything. And the guy, like, it basically gets to a point by the end of whatever shoot I'm involved in, it's smile and don't smile. Like, that's it. It's not, don't move, don't try to look one way or the other. It's basically you have two shots. We're going to do a pretend to be serious guy shot and a pretend to be very funny. You know, everyone's in a good spirit type of shot. That's it. I get two options. And it's not good. It's really not good.
No, it's never good. Now, photo shoots are absolutely terrifying, Hayes, and I've thankfully only been in a couple of them. But, well, Andy's running away with trophies, as usual. I liked your opener there about the new phraseology for retirement. Serena Williams has coined it. We are no longer retiring, folks. We are evolving away from that thing we used to do towards
isn't that
something
incredible?
Else.
Like, I have that? To salute her because this is so rich.
She's transitioning. She used the word transitioning, too.
Right.
Transition and the, evolving.
Doesn't like the word retirement, even though she will not be playing anymore.
Right.
It's evolving away. And I have decided I'm utilizing this as much as I possibly can. I'm evolving away from salads, and I'll be eating pizza tonight. I'm evolving away from, you know, this workout regimen, and I'll be sitting on the couch. I love it because it's not, you know, it's not quitting, not retirement. No. It's just evolving away. So I fully
moving
support
on.
It.
But I moving do on. Think there is a connotation there, Mr. Hazy, of evolving into something better. You're now moving on to something greater.
How
I don't
would
know
it be
if
greater?
Evolving out of your salads and then, you know, evolving into the couch fits that protocol.
Which I would argue is a greater option, personally. Having tried both many times, the latter more than the former, I think that is actually a positive transition. But listen,
okay.
I guess it's a mental thing. It's a very difficult thing for any athlete to accept that the road has come to an end. Mm-hmm. But she is, I believe, the greatest female tennis player of all time, one of the four or five greatest players ever, period. Men, women, it doesn't matter. And her stats speak for themselves. Moving on to whatever she's going to move on to, I don't picture it being as gratifying and as great as the career we just witnessed the last 20 years. So evolving would suggest, what, in a better place? I don't know. How could she be in a better place?
Well,
she just had the greatest career maybe of all time.
Well, and I mean, I'm sure she'll also use that to her benefit. I know in the Vogue article, she talked about she started some sort of venture. I don't know. So
yeah,
she
venture
started
capital
a business.
Fund. Yeah.
Yeah. So she started a venture capital fund. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I think she's also an investor in one of the NWSL teams.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That New Angel City one. So she's already investing in sports teams. So NWSL, obviously women's soccer. And I wonder if there's a new bebe in the future, because she starts off the whole article talking about her daughter, you know, saying how she really wants to be a big sister and has always talked about being a big sister and this, that, and what have you. So there's a lot that's going on. But I think that's the key, though, Hayes, and I think this is something that a lot of athletes struggle with, you know, because I always say this is the one profession where you are literally working your way towards it since you were 3, 4, 5 years old, right? Like even mm-hmm. Serena talked about holding a racket for the first time at like the age of 2. We know hockey players, like they put on skates, they're 3 years old, right? Like it's the one profession where it's all you've done for your entire life. And I think what they have to wrap their head around is that it's okay to move on to something else and still appreciate what they accomplished and what they did and what
sure.
happened, right? It's what is that? I'm going to totally butcher this. But what's that Dr. Seuss thing? Don't cry because it's over. Smile
because
it happened.
Because it happened. Yes. That's right. Yes. It's easier for her to smile because it happened because she won 23 slams and she's got probably yeah. $100 million in the bank. You know, are you evolving away if you're 23 and you're not good enough anymore? Does that count? I don't think so. I think it's specific to someone of – the ilk of Serena Williams.
Different circumstances.
Very different circumstances.
You know, but, you know, yeah, I get where you're coming from both. But I'm with Hayes. Like, when you are the greatest women's athlete of all time, in all likelihood, she's on the short list of the greatest athletes of all
period.
Time. Take out gender.
Yep.
I mean, she reinvented the whole idea of what it means to be a women's tennis player, because you look at that list of, what is it, wins over age 30. We're looking at Bianca Andreescu as somebody who was a phenom, won the U.S. Open a few years ago, and is just struggling to stay healthy because this sport, it chews up and spits out women and men at very young ages. She's won 10 slams after 30. The next person on the list is Martina Navratilova, who won 3. So no one's ever gone this long, played this well, done this many things outside the sport, and been great. And so she can evolve away from it. That's fine, but you can never recreate that kind of greatness. You know, I don't think there'll be any thrill that will match, you know, what she did on a tennis court. Maybe,
no.
I mean, maybe motherhood does it for her. I'm not privileged enough to know, but yeah, it's, we're all going to miss her because she was something to behold.
Well, it's incredible. Like she's in town right now, you know,
yeah.
she's
yeah.
in town winning. She won last night. Like she's rolling up here in Toronto. She's going to be at the U.S. Open in a couple of weeks.
But I mean, look at what Billie Jean King did for the sport and look at what she continues to do. Right? Like, I get the whole walking away, but to think that there's not still going to be a connection and there's still not going to be an influence over it. And I like when people have control over, in many ways, because we don't have control in so many ways in our life. So when she can say that after this, I'm walking away, I think how wonderful that is. Now, I don't know what the future holds, but I mean, look at what's happening to Roger Federer right now, dealing with injuries. He has not retired, but I mean, it's just like, where'd he go? Kind of what's happening? Is he going to try a comeback? Is it going to be triumphant? Which, okay, then that's a different story and the ending is wonderful. Or is it going to be like, perm, perm, perm? And then you kind of feel bad because you wish you didn't push it. And
I think that's
I
more likely, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
I think we see Roger probably at Wimbledon next year. Maybe he wins a couple rounds. But the idea of Federer not legitimately having the ambition of winning the tournament is a difficult thing to chew on. I mean, we're seeing it with Tiger Woods. You know, like Tiger's playing in these tournaments, and he had no shot at winning. Like, when you look back on it now, there was a lot of buildup going into St. Andrews. He's won there multiple times. He's familiar with the course, the nature of the setup. He didn't even make the cut. Like, he was flying out of there Friday night. He was
yeah.
back at Jupiter. Like, it wasn't even close. At the PGA at Southern Hills, that was destructive. Like, that was him sculling balls. Like, it was really tough to watch. And I hope he can figure that out. I hope Roger can find a way to figure it out. I think Serena is probably sitting here hoping she can go on some sort of a run at the U.S. Open. I don't think she can win the Open, but could she have a Jimmy Connors moment where, you know, she makes it to the semis or something and New York
yeah.
is alive? You know, that would be an incredible way to go out. and evolve away from, you know, the U.S. Open and the world of tennis. But, you know, she's in
Isn't
town.
Isn't it like hockey when people don't when teams don't want to acknowledge the fact that they have to rebuild? Like, we're retooling.
Right, exactly.
That's exactly it.
Yes. This is – I want to see – I can't wait for someone to try to use it. I could see Ross Atkins using it. I could possibly see Dubas. You know, we're evolving away from being a competitive team right now. We're just evolving away, right?
Maybe we're evolving away from using Yusei Kikuchi now.
Yeah, that would make some sense. So if the Blue Jays, I would really like to support them evolving away from ever seeing Yusei Kikuchi pitch again. Can we all support that? Because it's an absolute disaster. And it was again last night. I guess credit to him for battling and getting through five. But him against right-handed hitters right now is it's a pitching machine. Like, it's set up inside the plate, pitching machine, and he's getting roasted. And I remember when the deal happened, I said, this feels like Tanner Roark to me. Who is giving this guy 3 years at $36 million? And this is an issue that Ross Atkins is having right now. Is the deadline was very underwhelming. But I think in large part because they did their heavy lifting in the offseason the last few years. And the reality of their current situation is, if you go in chronological order, the first big signing, Hyunjin Ryu, likely never pitches again.
Yeah.
Not for this team. Then you go to George Springer on the IL. I'm not sure when he's playing again. I'm not sure when he's going to be 100%. Then the next offseason, Yusei Kikuchi. Now, he also signed Kevin Gausman. Gausman's been great. Credit to him sure. Robbie Ray was the credit. Marcus Semien. There have been other big pieces, of course.
Sure.
But Ryu, Springer, Kikuchi, those are three big contracts, big signings in the offseason with the anticipation that you'll have them available to you at the deadline so you don't have to fill those roles. And the only guy who's currently available is Kikuchi, and he might as well be on the IL. Because he's killing you every fifth day.
Well, and it just amazes me how they continue to spin this, Hayes and Andy, because you heard John Schneider last night trying to spin it positively, saying, you know, we liked everything you did except for those, you know, few pitches that ended up over the fence.
Right.
You
they know? Evolved and, out yeah, of the park.
Exactly. Yes. Evolved away from the actual playing ground into the stands.
Yes.
Isn't that like sort of like saying, hey, the surgery was a success other than the fact the patient's dead. You know, you can't like
that's
that outing.
Yes.
But they keep telling themselves that we like this guy. We believe he's grinding. He's working like this. There's no participation in effort ribbons here at this point in the season. And I just don't know what they're going to do here.
Well, they're spinning it the same spin with Barrios. You can know because Schneider said it to us a couple of weeks ago when we interviewed it. I've seen other members of the team pump this out. That yes, Barrios' stats are abysmal. But when he's on the mound, they're winning.
Right.
Like when he starts, they are winning. Well, technically, when Charlie Montoya was your manager, you were winning. But that didn't matter because it's not just about wins and losses. It is about performance and trying to break down how players are performing. And, you know, you got a scenario again tonight where Alek Manoah is on the mound. The amount of pressure on this guy every time he steps on the mound is immense. And I cannot credit him enough for never crumbling under it. Like, I fully expect he pitches a gem tonight. I fully expect Manoah rolls tonight. I think they win tonight. And, you know, then you go into Barrios tomorrow. Look who he is sandwiched with right now. You got Kikuchi on the front end, Barrios on the back end. Manoah's got to go tonight. He's got to give him probably 6-7 innings and strong performance. And I think he's up to it, but he's still a kid, technically, and that's what they're asking out of him.
No,
it's a delicate situation, too, right? Given where they are, as much as we'd love for Atkins or Schneider to come on out and be like, this is horrendous. Like, what? Come on. You can't. They're battling. I mean, they're battling big time.
They're still in a wild card spot.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
It's all the mental game right now.
It absolutely is.
It's not good.
But, you know, once you get to the playoffs, you know, you're going to need a third starter to perform for you. You're going to need, you know, depth. And, you know, today they signed Jackie Bradley Jr., who was just designated for assignment out of Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't hit. He is not hitting. He's never been a great hitter.
No.
He's not defending at the same level that he once did, but he's still a very serviceable center fielder for sure. But this is telling me that they're looking at it thinking, we don't know when Springer's back. We don't know what's going to happen with Springer. Whit Merrifield has given us decent play there, but he might need to play second base because we don't know what's up with Espinal moving forward. You know, Espinal is coming closer to the real Espinal as opposed to the all-star Espinal. And, you know, they're, for a team that is, again, well-positioned in terms of a wild card race, it's not a huge amount of breathing room. It's not. And
no,
they have 14 games left against Baltimore, which is significant. You know, they're putting some fires out at times here in terms of individual players.
I wonder if they're hoping, Hayes, that, you know, I don't know, but we talked yesterday and we've been talking about their lack of left-handed help in the bullpen. Are they just kind of jollying Kikuchi along with an eye toward, okay, when crunch time comes, you're going to be out in the bullpen because we need a left-handed arm out there and maybe we can trust you, although I think every fan that watches these games is going to shudder when he steps out of the bullpen, but maybe we can trust you with three batters at some point in a playoff run. I mean, it's hard to imagine, but maybe that's their only option for a lefty out of the pen.
It might be, but like with the new rules where you got to either close an inning out or face three batters, it's terrifying that someone that hits right is going to step up to the plate in the playoffs, right? If it was a pure situational scenario, then I could reason with that. But the modern baseball rules do not necessarily make you feel great about that option. So, yeah, we'll see.
No,
we'll
it's almost like you don't eat a lefty out there. It's weird. It's,
at this point, So Scott Mitchell will join us in about 15 minutes. We'll get his take on the Jackie Bradley Jr. signing. What does it say about Springer and his future? What does he make of Kikuchi and where that's going? Manoah and him out tonight. How about this report that Ben Simmons decided to evolve away from a group chat? I'm going to play this for weeks, man. The evolving away thing, there's so much material here.
Love it.
The segues
so
just write themselves. So why don't we play the clip? Rick Bucher, was he on with Cowherd? I can't remember. He was on Fox Sports, I think. And Rick Bucher, who's an NBA insider. This is a pretty significant report that just gets dropped out of nowhere in the middle of August. But here's what he had to say about the Brooklyn Nets and Ben Simmons and their relationship during the playoffs and when he was dealing with injuries.
Ben Simmons, they're having a team chat before game four, thinking he's going to play against the Boston Celtics. And from what I'm told, Ben just left the chat. They asked him, are you going to play? Ben left the chat. Like, he didn't even answer the question, just left the chat. And Katie's like, this is what I signed up. Like, this is who I'm playing with?
That is evolving away from a chat, man. That one.
Because
is...
you see it too, right? Like, Ben Simmons has left the chat. Like, the notification comes up.
Exactly.
I need access to this. You know, like, there's serious stuff going on in the world. There's raids going on in the world. This needs to be raided. A phone that is involved in this needs to come public because I need this screenshot of, hey, you good? You playing? We need you. Ben Simmons has left the chat. It's incredible. Incredible.
Well, it's always been the knock on Ben Simmons, right? Like, for all the talent, and we know how good he can be. I mean, this guy didn't get a max contract for nothing. It's about, does he actually love basketball in the way that Kevin Durant clearly loves basketball, right? As high maintenance an individual and as bad as Kevin Durant is making the NBA look with this ridiculous demand that both the GM and the coach of his team be fired or he should be traded. Nobody can question this, that this guy is a baller who absolutely lives for the game. Ben Simmons, not so much. And I think, you know, it is hard to imagine sometimes how you go to work with a guy that's making that kind of money that clearly is just not that into it.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say this about the group chat? Have you ever been in a group chat though, where even if you step away for 2 seconds, even if you just got to take the trash out, you come back to your phone and you've already missed 15 messages. So when you try to go back to see where, you know, you left off, somebody new will then text and it jumps to that. So you're constantly doing this like annoying scroll back up, jump back down. There have been times where I've just left chats because I can't keep up. So if this is in fact a true story, and no, I'm not going to defend Ben Simmons when it comes to playing and just what in the heck is going on. But in the chat group situation, my friends, I can't keep up sometimes. I just exit. I'm like, I'm out. Peace.
I can't support that.
I am out.
So let me get this straight. Instead of, like, you were included in the beginnings of the group chat. So you kind of have an understanding of who's in there, where it's going. You miss out on a chapter, and that's it? You're gone? You're
but
out.
But it keeps going. And then sometimes, and God bless my girlfriends, and I love them, but they'll feel like sharing stories at 10 p.m. at night. Guess who's already tucked into bed?
That can be difficult.
I can't have my phone going off every 2 seconds, so I just peace out.
Have you ever rejoined the group?
Oh, yeah.
So they'll, but don't they have to invite you back in? I don't know. I've never been a group, you know, denier.
I think it's a little different, maybe. I don't know. There's groups that are WhatsApp groups, and then there's just the text messaging groups.
And to be fair to Ben Simmons, guys, and Andy, I'm on Andy's side on this, Hayes. Like, sometimes, like, the messages pile up. It's like, I got other things to do here, guys.
Does he have other things to do? Ben Simmons has literally nothing to do.
But to defend Ben Simmons, there are conflicting reports on this. I believe Shams Charania, the insider for The Athletic, has gone on record saying that, claiming that this did not happen. As Rick Bucher says, it happened. Now, who to believe in these situations?
Who knows?
Some of these insiders have ties to agents who, you know, I'm not saying they spread misinformation or untruths. I'm saying they have, you know, you gotta kind of know who's repping who when you're listening to NBA insiders at this point in time in the evolution, the evolving away from kind of beat reporters who've become almost celebrity slash, you know, tied
into
agencies.
Yeah, hot takers, guys, and that's Bucher.
Yeah.
But, like, I love how, like, Shams, you know, credit to him, he's the quota insider. But now if he says it, it's 100%. Like, how do we know that Simmons didn't write, you know, hey, no, that's not true, you know, or whatever. And it's, how can you ever corroborate this stuff? Clearly, Bucher heard it. Shams jumped on it, whatever, fine.
I know.
But,
you don't know.
You know, I don't put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't quite literally him leaving, but basically he just didn't respond. Because remember,
Simmons, he
didn't play. The whole thing was he was building up towards playing, and then all of a sudden, because they were down 3-0, he's like, I'm out, and I can't play anymore. And, you know, the politics of group chats and trying to keep up and trying to get in, trying to change topics, it's very confusing. You know, it really is a modern-day soap opera. And, you know, it's similar to the – because I'd love to know the analytics on how many in our society – have the red option on their text, you know, where it says like this message
has been. Oh, I do not have that.
Oh, read receipts.
Oh, God,
read
no.
Receipts.
I've turned mine off.
You have to, because I see everything. I'm like, I'm not responding to that right now. But if they know I've read it, then it's such an ignorant move. Red. If you're left on red for like an extended period of time, it is absolutely a slap in the face.
But isn't that such a hero move? Like, if you had it open so you allow, you know, people to see or that you've read it and you still don't respond, you're just like, no. I'm going to live my life.
I've read it.
I'm going to get back to you when I get back to you.
Right. Yeah. Just take the red off of it. And even
I don't
have
the guts to do that, though, so I've taken it off.
I got it off immediately. I remember I told my sister once, like, years ago, because we were texting back and forth, and I saw that she had left me on red for a few minutes. I'm like, you got to get that off. Like, forget about me. You know, you're going to read your husband's text and leave him on red for half an hour. He's going to be like, what the hell's going on? You
no,
got to get
okay.
rid of
sometimes,
the red option.
Sometimes
the grappler says Pierre LeBrun
yourself.
Used to have him on.
Yes. Yes, he did. Pierre did for a while. My neighbor still does. I had the conversation with him, and he had a weird response. He said, I can't change it now because I'm known as the red guy on text. And I'm like, what kind of logic is that? Like, just pretend you got a new phone, you've upgraded, and you've changed the programming on it. Why would you want to remain on red? Like, it just
exactly.
The pressure that comes with, oh, God, they know I saw it. It's terrible. Should not even be an option. Should not be an option. No one should know when I've read any text ever.
Hey,
I don't
you
need
ever
to know when you've read
figure out
mine.
That woman, who she was, who left
no.
you that voice message?
No. My understanding is, as people wrote in and we talked about it, is someone must have been somehow programming my phone number into a spam call. You know, I guess you can do that where you can change the number that you're actually using and make it some whatever number you want. So they must have been using my number. Came up on her ID, and she just called back thinking, okay, this could be someone I know. And then she was kind of thinking it through during the voicemail, and she's like, I don't think I know it, Brian. Anyway. bye for now.
Commitment to call back a number you don't even know. I
very
don't
committed.
Call anything back.
No, I'm not on red. I'm not calling back. I don't voicemail. Very antisocial when it comes to, you know, current technology and social media, et cetera. Anyway, the Jays are in action tonight, coming off a loss last night. Manoah's on the mound. They've signed Jackie Bradley Jr. What does it mean for the center field position? What does it mean, and what does it tell us about George Springer? Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, will help us break that down next. All right, the Jays are back in action in Baltimore tonight, and their lineup is out. As we know, Manoah's on the mound. You've got Gurriel back in the lineup hitting leadoff tonight. So Lourdes Gurriel Jr. leading off. He's been outstanding recently. Vladdy's hitting second. He's been great. Vladdy will DH tonight. Kirk third, Chapman fourth, Bichette fifth. You got Espinal hitting ninth. Espinal playing second tonight, hitting ninth. And Whit Merrifield back in center field for tonight's game. And to tee it up, among other things, here is our TSN Blue Jay reporter Scott Mitchell. What's up, Scotty?
Oh, you know, just if this was 2016 or something like that, it would be an all-star team the Jays are putting together with Jackie Bradley Jr. and Whit Merrifield, right. You know, a couple of all-stars in the past. So it would be interesting to see how both these work out.
Yeah, too bad it's 2022. So Jackie Bradley Jr. was designated for assignment. He couldn't cut it in Boston, and the Jays end up picking him up today. He's not available for them right now. He's not in the lineup tonight. But what does this tell you about the status of Springer and the thought process in terms of what could happen with center field?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, they're looking for some more outfield depth, which, you know, makes sense. And the fact that he hits left-handed, you know, makes sense as well. And, you know, I look at this one as more kind of bottom of the roster maneuvering in a way, you know, more than anything with Springer. When they traded for Merrifield, that was, you know, quite obvious that that was a contingency plan, you know, in case Springer couldn't go, in case he eventually needed time on the IL, which is obviously the case at this point. And, you know, we'll see where things go from here. I haven't heard, you know, anything, you know, overly positive, but I haven't heard anything overly negative. I think it's still something he's going to manage. But, you know, when you look at JBJ, I think you look at Bradley Zimmer and, you know, what he's played and, you know, the role he's played and, you know, what he's done, you know, with his production or lack thereof. And, you know, 28 WRC plus, he just really hasn't hit at all in the, you know, late inning defensive specialist, pinch hit, pinch run role. And, you know, when you look at JBJ over his career, you know, he's had his moments and, you know, he's a guy who's been there before. So, you know, if you're betting on one of these two guys getting hot, you know, down the stretch, I think you're probably going to bet on Jackie Bradley Jr. more than you're betting on Zimmer. So, you know, I think maybe when Springer's healthy, you know, the guy whose roster spot's kind of in jeopardy here is Bradley Zimmer.
So, Scott, obviously talking about betting on somebody to get hot, it seems like the Blue Jays keep wishing that Yusei Kikuchi will get hot and figure something out between now and the end of this season. But again, last night, we see him having problems keeping the ball inside the ballpark with the Baltimore Orioles and giving up three home runs in the course of this, you know, 7-4 loss. What do you make of the positivity that the Blue Jays keep spinning when it comes to Kikuchi, and do you think it'll ever work?
Well, look, I think the positivity has to do with they don't really have anybody else. So, you know, when you look at the fact that, you know, he's essentially their number four starter right now, it's, you know, if you want to look at the deadline and quibble with what the Jays did, you know, I think they added some bullpen depth. You'd like to see some more swing and miss, maybe a different impact guy. But, you know, the big thing that could really sink this, you know, second half of the season in a way is the lack of, you know, impact in the rotation. And, you know, you see Ross Stripling go right on the IL, you know, a couple days after, you know, the trade deadline, which, you know, puts Mitch White, who was supposed to be, you know, kind of swingman depth, into the rotation. And then you're counting on Kikuchi even more. And, you know, I think if anything, over the first 4 months of, you know, his Blue Jays tenure here, I think, you know, the one thing we've all agreed on is you can't really count on him from a start-to-start basis. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting because, you know, he looked okay when he came off the IL and he maybe thought, you know, that was what he needed to kind of figure things out and iron out some of his mechanical issues. But, you know, it's kind of been back to the same old guy. And, you know, there's not a lot of optimism right now that, you know, he's going to suddenly figure it out because, you know, we're sitting here heading into mid-August and, you know, it's really been, you know, since April, since we've seen a real dominant Kikuchi start. You know, you're going to keep coming back to it if you're the Blue Jays, because you got him for 3 years, $36 million. And, you know, you see those flashes of dominance and you just hope they show up down the stretch.
With Scott Mitchell, our TSN Blue Jay reporter. Yeah, I said earlier this hour, Scotty, that, you know, Atkins clearly took a lot of heat for a lack of activity at the deadline. But I think his argument, even though he wasn't willing to make it at the time because people were overly sensitive, understandably, is that they've done a lot of their heavy lifting in the offseason, including Hyunjin Ryu, who's not available to them, George Springer, who's not available to them, and Yusei Kikuchi, who's available, but they don't want him to be. And, you know, there's obviously positive signings in there as well. Gausman's been a great signing. Robbie Ray was. Marcus Semien was, among others. But how much, you know, concern has to be there if you're Ross Atkins that you've invested big money in some guys who either literally can't play right now or are so, you know, underperforming that they're killing you every fifth day?
Yeah, look, that's the thing. I mean, you can complain all you want about, you know, the deadline and you know, what the Jays did or didn't do. And, you know, some of them are fair complaints. And, you know, would you always like to be the team, you know, going out and get Berríos every year? Yeah, sure. But, you know, this team isn't going to win or lose, you know, at the end of this season because of what they did or didn't do at the trade deadline. It's going to be because of those stars and, you know, the guys they invested them in. And this is a very good ball club. You know, you look at the fact that, you know, Vladdy's kind of coming out and looking like potentially he's going to have a monster second half of the season. And, you know, you got some guys that are, you know, kind of taking turns. And I think when you look at this club, you know, the one thing you can look at now is, you know, is their rotation depth going to sewer them? Because if they, you know, only have their top three and Berríos kind of doing that dance every fifth day of, you know, coming out with a clunker as well. You know, if you're looking at that back end of the rotation and really struggling to find guys over the second half, you know, that's going to be tough. I think with the extra wild card, you got to feel safe. But, yeah, you know, you've invested in Springer long term. And, you know, if he needs any sort of procedure in the offseason on that elbow, you know, you maybe miss him for a chunk of next season to begin it. You know, never know what's going to go on with that, because I don't think anybody knows what's going on with it right now in there. So, yeah, it's tough. I mean, you've invested in a lot of pitching and, you know, you need those guys to stay healthy. And, you know, health's going to dictate where things go over this next year and a half for this ball club for sure.
Scott, does the Toronto Blue Jays pitching scare anybody? I mean, it's one thing to get into the playoffs. You seek into the playoffs. Can you go far? Is it a bullpen that actually scares people?
Bullpen, definitely not. And, you know, that's the thing that you can really look at this deadline and, you know, you say you needed to add somebody, you know, that throws 98, 99 and, you know, has big swing and miss at the end of the bullpen with Jordan Romano. And, you know, he's the only guy. And, you know, there's some real red flags in his profile right now, you know, how he's pitched and, you know, some of the home runs he's given up and things like that. So, yeah, that's the thing. When you stack up all the contenders across baseball and you look at the back end of the bullpen, you know, the Blue Jays looks a little bit different. They don't have a bad bullpen per se. It's kind of more of a Tampa Bay Rays-ish type bullpen where they have different looks. And that's kind of what they've been trying to acquire. They've got Trevor Richards, the guy who throws a changeup. They got a couple sinker ballers now. That was the idea with Zach Pop. And, you know, you got to deploy them in the right situations and you got to hope they're pitching well, you know, come October.
So, Scott, we've been talking all year about how the Blue Jays have been doing okay, you know, well into the playoff position without the guy that was an MVP candidate last year, Vladdy Guerrero Jr., really getting hot. Are we starting to see signs that maybe there is a push from Vladdy down the stretch here? He's on, what, a 19-game hit streak, looked good again last night. What are you seeing when you look at the big slugger?
Yeah, absolutely. He looks, you know, a whole lot more confident than he has at any point, really, since he was hot early in the season. You know, it's all about swing decisions with him. And, you know, he lays off everything when he's going right. And, you know, when he's not, you see him chasing a lot. And, you know, I haven't seen him chasing a whole lot coming out of the All-Star break. And, yeah, his numbers are kind of trending in the right direction. I remember, you know, sitting there about a month ago and he was hitting something like 260. And you kind of wonder, you know, that just seems so out of character, you know, numbers-wise for him. And now all of a sudden you look back up and he's in the 290 range. So, yeah, look, I think this guy, I think we all know this guy's got another gear or two in him. And, you know, the Blue Jays just need to hope that that shows up in the second half of the season. There's no guarantee over the course of the season that, you know, this guy is going to put up MVP type numbers like he did, you know, in 2021. And, you know, I think there's another gear in Bo Bichette as well. We've seen that before. So, you know, these two guys get hot, they can carry a lineup, and, you know, they're probably going to need that at some point, you know, over these next few weeks with, you know, the lack of starting pitching depth and, you know, just trying to figure some things out on the pitching side.
Espinal hit ninth tonight. He has not had a multi-hit game in quite some time. He's been hitless the last couple of outings. Do you see this as a part of the Jackie Bradley Jr. signing, like allows Merrifield to play some second in the future? Like, what do you see happening here, and how do you think they feel about where Espinal's going?
Yeah, it's definitely been a rough go. Look, I think he, you know, brings enough on the defensive side that, you know, he's not going to, you know, find himself nailed to the bench anytime soon. But, you know, I think ideally in the Blue Jays front office mind, you have a healthy George Springer, which allows Whit Merrifield to kind of mix in at second base and, you know, allow Espinal to, you know, maybe play a little bit of a part-time role until, you know, he finds his swing. Because, yeah, you mentioned the numbers there. It's been, you know, quite a while, you know, a longer stretch, you know, coming into the All-Star break, you know, since he's kind of, you know, hasn't really had the type of numbers that got him to the All-Star game. So, you know, it's going to be interesting because he's never done it over a full season. Obviously put a lot of work into his body in the off-season. Maybe that helps him down the stretch. But look, he's definitely fading in these summer months. And, you know, I think that's why the Merrifield trade looks kind of so good right now on paper with, you know, Springer hurt and Espinal struggling, because, you know, you get one of those two guys back and going, and it allows Merrifield to play a role.
Scott, I want to go back to a name you just mentioned there in Bo Bichette, and obviously, yeah, if the bats get hot too, like, it's a different story, and in particular his, because we know he's struggling. And, you know, yesterday there was a clip that they played where he was the last at bat, hopefully trying to make something happen, and they just knew that he was going to swing at the first pitch, which he did. It was a double. It's over. They end up losing. Is there any kind of concern about the predictability, I guess, you know, when he steps up to plate, and it just seems like teams have kind of figured him out. They know what he's going to do.
Well, look, I think that's the best way to describe it. I think, you know, teams over the course of the winter kind of looked at the video and looked at what he does well and what he doesn't do well. And, you know, they figured out that he chases a whole lot. And, you know, when he's not going right, he'll chase anything off the plate. He'll chase up and away. You know, he just chases way too much. And, you know, that's what he is. He's an aggressive hitter. He's never going to change. You know, he's always going to be, you know, in the top percentage of guys who, you know, swing at pitches in the zone and out of the zone as well. So when you look at, you know, what he is, he's not going to change. But when he's going bad, it's not great. And I don't think he's ever kind of found himself this year. And it's kind of been interesting because he hasn't really adjusted back to the league. And, you know, I think that's the next step for Bichette is being able to figure out, you know, what pitchers are doing, which, you know, really anybody can if you watch his at-bats. They're just throwing it off the plate and he's chasing too much. And, mm-hmm. you know, he needs to find a way to rectify that and get in a groove. And, you know, we've seen him get in grooves before. Last year in September was, you know, one of his best stretches as a big leaguer. So kind of like Vladdy, you know, it's been a worse year for Bichette, but, you know, there's upside in it in the second half if he can, you know, find his form.
Absolutely. And you got the big man on the mound tonight. That is helpful. You got Alec Manoah going game two of the series down in Baltimore. Enjoy it, Scotty. We'll do it again later in the week.
All right. Cheers, guys. Take care.
Scott Mitchell, our TSN Blue Jay reporter, Jays Orioles tonight. And, Jackie Bradley Jr. not in the lineup tonight, but will be an option moving forward. And Alec Manoah on the mound tonight. How about the Chris Sale news?
Yeah.
That his season's done after, what did he fracture his wrist with a biking accident?
Riding his bike, Hayes. I mean,
it's like going downhill a little too quickly.
Biking for lunch. And,
like, as much as we're sitting here moaning about Yusei Kikuchi and the Jays giving him 3 years at 36, how about the Red Sox giving Chris Sale 5 years, 145, and he's 3 years into it and he's pitched 47 total innings.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, it's crazy. The last 2 years, he's just been completely non-existent. Like, he was trending towards Hall of Fame territory.
Yeah.
Like, with the way he was pitching with the White Sox, and then, you know, his initial starts in Boston, he looked great. And now he's just a mess, man. He's injured all the time. He's never around. He's not pitching enough, and he likely won't pitch enough in the future to probably get this back on the rails in terms of a Hall of Fame candidacy.
He's evolving away from the Hall of Fame, man.
That's right, he is. He's evolving away from Cooperstown.
I feel for a guy like this. Like, can you imagine? So what was he recovering from? Like a broken pinky? Did he not have some rib cage?
He took a comeback.
Yeah, he took
off
a liner.
The hand. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, you're dealing with all these injuries to begin with, and then you get on your bike to go for lunch. Like, I get on my bike. I do things on my bike all the time. Like, you just don't think that you're going to go down a hill. I mean, I don't know if he hit a pothole or whatever it was. And then you break your wrist. That's what happens when you get older, right? Because as a kid, you fall off the bike, you scrape, you know, the knees, you get up, you go. As an adult, you fall, suddenly you're hospitalized.
Absolutely.
Like, that's the issue with getting older, right? You can't even fall off a bike anymore and just go about your merry way. But I just hope someone's checking in on him. Because I can't imagine mentally, like, up here, what is going on that it's like one broken bone after another.
Yeah.
I know we could sit here and make fun of it. We could talk about the money and all that stuff. But, oh, my goodness. I can't imagine what he's going through.
No, it's spicy pork and broccoli. It's not the best.
Yes.
And, not the best.
You know, I wonder – this is a complete, like, theory for me. This has no journalistic integrity whatsoever. Because, obviously, I have no idea what happened. But if I had to guess, and I'm willing to guess, looking at his phone on his bike.
Oh, no.
Hey.
My guess,
no.
purely speculation, but would it shock anyone that adult, if you know, you blow a wheel because you're looking at your phone and then you lose control and see you later?
How many times? I mean, that is one of my pet peeves. Now, I used to be, I'm getting old, so I've decided in my dotage that I used to think cycling in Toronto was cool, and I did it a lot. And now I've just realized it's way too dangerous.
No, I don't go on the roads, man.
Way too dangerous.
But how many times do you see people, Andy? You see this all the time too, Andy. Like, you see guys and girls on their bikes and, you know, fully grown adults that should know better on their bikes in traffic on their freaking phones. I just can't think of anything more dangerous.
No, I don't ride on major streets. I ride in my neighborhood and I cut through little back alleys where there are very few cars because I just... A, I don't want to ride on the road. It's to your point. It's already congested between cars, pedestrians, and construction. There are crazy drivers out there, but there are also just other crazy riders. So last month when I went to the Lorenzo Insigne welcome party, like there on College Street, I was waiting at a light. I was getting ready to leave. And two cyclists, they were so close to one another, but then another car happened to just also be really close because it was, you know, rush hour. The sound of two bodies colliding and flying through the air, thank goodness they actually got up. I'm sure they had some scrapes and what have you, but nobody needed to be hospitalized, let's put it that way. It was like the sound alone, I can still hear the crunch of the one car hitting the one cyclist. The other cyclist was too close to him, hit his back wheel, flew over.
Wow.
It was a disaster. I'm like, nah, man, you are never going to catch me riding on College Street.
No, because you mix in a streetcar, you know, a bus. Oh. We just, it's too much. It's too much.
And the other thing is, like, if you're on your phone on your bike, guess what? The people in the cars are also on their phones. And who's going to win that little showdown?
That doesn't help. That's true. That feels like, you know, hundreds of years from now, we're going to look back and say, what the hell were people thinking early on in the technological era? Right? Because we are still incredibly raw. Like the internet, we are barely into this. This is never going away. Thousands of years, it's still going to be in existence.
Yep.
And they're going to look back and think, do you know that in 2022, like people were staring at their phone? Well, for starters, we won't be driving in the future. You know, it's going to be self-drive cars.
No, and our cell phones are going to be right in our retinas.
Probably just right
exactly.
In, exactly, right in our...
Right in the eye.
Right in the eye. Just take it right in the eye. Like, and that's what it's going to be. Can you imagine we actually had to hold phones and dial people? You know, what a disgusting idea.
We had read receipts. Can you believe that?
Yeah, exactly. Like read and evolving away from group chats. What is a group chat in the future? Who the hell knows?
Oh, too good.
Anyway, Mike Johnson will join us. Johnny's coming up in about 20 minutes. The World Juniors, he's out there. Canada beginning their pursuit of a World Junior gold in August. That'll start tomorrow. We'll tee that up with Johnny. Some news in terms of captaincies in the league. We'll get into that. As well, Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Mike Johnson in about 15 minutes. The FedEx Cup beginning this week, and the LIV players are suing the PGA Tour and they're trying to get into the FedEx Cup, and there's a lot of news coming out of it. First of all, there are reports of James Corrigan is reporting, I believe he's a golf reporter for the Daily Telegraph, that it's a done deal. Cam Smith is gone. He's going to the LIV. He's gone. So he's 28 years old. He's a number two player in the world. He just won the Open Championship. He's gone. That is a massive hit to the PGA Tour. Massive. And it sounds as if he's going to play at the FedEx Cup and then jump to LIV. He's second in FedEx Cup points right now. He could win the FedEx Cup, and then as he's hoisting the trophy, kind of like Andy, bringing a second trophy, and announce he's going to LIV. Like, what? That's evolving away from the PGA Tour. That's how you do it. That's how you evolve away. It's crazy, man. Crazy if he goes. Cam Smith is a superstar, and he's gone. That is crushing for the PGA Tour. Crushing.
Andy, how do you feel about this idea of this one sport that's the meritocracy? We all love it because you got to earn your paycheck. You don't get guaranteed money. How do you feel, Andy, about all these guys saying all that Saudi guaranteed money? We're taking it.
Well, I don't want to be a hypocrite, because if anyone ever offered me that kind of dough, sayonara deuces, like, I'm out taking it. Like, I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite, guys.
That's right. Right.
And act like I sit on some sort of moral high ground. I do not. But, I mean, I've been trying to keep up with the LIV and the PGA dramatics. I mean, this is a soap opera. And I'm exhausted. I don't even know how to feel about it anymore. I mean, I get it at first glance. You're like, of course the PGA should be really upset because this is competition, right? They've been the big dog for so long. It's like the taxi drivers getting all ticked off when Uber came on board, right? Like,
I get it.
You don't like the competition. But I guess what I would say is this. Even if LIV were to fold, even if LIV doesn't last, like, as the PGA, you still need a lot of those golfers, right? Because they're still big names. They're still great. So I get that your emotions are running hot right now, so it's kind of like a screw you fest. But let's just say LIV doesn't survive, right? Good. Pat yourself on the back. You win that one. But you still need those golfers back. But now, like, all kinds of bridges are being burned. Feelings are being hurt. Just, like, stop the nonsense.
Oh,
and then let's
good.
Just say LIV does survive and LIV does thrive. Like, at some point, are you not going to have to figure out how to work together so you can share the big names in golf?
Okay, keep that thought. Let's get into that more extensively. I think you're onto something there. Hour two coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.